It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We focus now on pet adoption as reports from animal shelters around the country say high intake of animals and low adoption rates means that they're over capacity. According to the Shelter Animals Count National Database and its second quarter report, the imbalance is chalked up to not enough pets getting adopted month after month starting last year and a staffing and volunteer shortage. Join in on Rescue Animals, the view from your local shelter, especially if you've had an experience to share with a recent adoption, 800-642-1234. Angela Speed is Vice President of Communications at Wisconsin Humane Society. Angela, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thank you so much for having me this morning, Kate.
Well, help us understand these reports of overcrowding at shelters. What is the situation like at Wisconsin Humane Society?
So fortunately, at the Wisconsin Humane Society, we are not seeing a huge spike. It's not a crisis situation. What we are seeing is that local animal intake, strays and surrendered animals in particular, are beginning to return to pre-pandemic times. In 2020 and 2021, intake was very low. And we're starting to see our numbers, especially this spring, return to like 2019. The only exception, though, is interesting. It's surrendered cats. They are still quite low compared to pre-pandemic times. We also get a lot of questions about returns, those COVID returns. And our return rate remains pretty flat. We are not seeing that. Some shelters across the U.S. are seeing that. But our return rate remains totally flat to prior years.
Okay, that's really interesting because that is good news. You also recently lowered the adoption fee to encourage adoption. How did that go?
So our adoption fees are variable. They range according to the type of animal, how long they've been with us. Right now, we've totally waived fees for small animal adoptions. We have seen an increase in animals like guinea pigs and rabbits, rats, mice. So there are no fees for those types of animals right now. And adult cats, we waive fees. We've been waiving fees for adult cats for at least 15 years now. And that does help keep the length of time the animals are with us. It keeps that quite low.
I was going to ask just that. Does it result in more pets finding homes?
Absolutely. One of the things I would share, too, is that adoption demand remains very high. On average, dogs are staying with us a day or two on the adoption floor. Cats, maybe 2 to 3 days. But we are seeing continued adoption demand for the animals in our care, which is awesome.
What can you point to there? Because, you know, the pandemic is, it's been going on for quite some time now. We're not in those early stages where the world was really contained and shut down.
So in Wisconsin and like the northern Midwest for 30, 40 years has been practicing spay neuter, and that has kept overpopulation in check in the northern half of the U.S. So we have fewer animals overall in like the last 10 years coming into the shelter system, but a lot of adopters looking for new animals. And so we do often open up our doors at 11 o'clock to a line at our Milwaukee campus. People are eager to take on one or two dogs into their lives or multiple cats. And our adoption process itself is easy. We do same day adoptions. It's not an adoption application where you're a yes or a no. We work one-on-one with people to do first come first served adoptions as long as it's a good fit.
We're talking about pet rescues with Angela Speed of the Wisconsin Humane Society, largest sheltering organization in the state, 5 facilities, Milwaukee, Door County, Green Bay, Racine, and Ozaukee. You can join in what you've seen in your shelter, 800-642-1234. So, Angela, last month, more than 4,000 beagles were rescued from a mass breeding facility in Virginia after they were severely mistreated, and at least 60 of them are being cared for by your organization. Can you tell us about this rescue?
Yes. Just over a week ago, we brought 62 beagles to Wisconsin as part of that huge operation. We had 2 transport volunteers drive out to the East Coast, and they transported back 9 adult mothers and 53 puppies back to Wisconsin. And within 2 hours, we had all 62 dogs in foster homes throughout southeastern Wisconsin. It was a huge honor to be part of that journey for those animals, and a privilege to be a part of the Humane Society of the United States team that made that happen. And they are still currently all in foster care, but we do expect the first puppies to be available for adoption late this week or this weekend. And it is so rewarding. There are so many firsts for them to experience, from walking in the grass for the first time and playing with toys to sleeping in dog beds, especially for the adult moms who we know have lived in cages their entire lives.
Oh, wow. What a change. And I'm wondering what happens in that foster home point in time before the adoption out to a family occurs?
So the reason that they went to foster was because the moms are all still nursing their puppies. And yes, they're too young for adoption. They still need to be weaned before they can have their spay-neuter surgery. And so it's really important that they're in a home environment. As nice as our shelters are, they always do better in a home environment. And so as our veterinarians clear them for spay-neuter surgery, they'll have those initial vaccinations, spay-neuter, get microchipped, and then they'll become available for adoption.
So as you talk about foster homes, it brings up the topic of volunteerism and you relying on volunteers to help facilitate adoptions and, you know, assisting in the foster care and the walking of dogs. Do you have enough volunteers at this point?
Right now, we have about 2,000 volunteers in our network, but I would say we always need new foster parents. They're like having a sixth shelter. Last year, we had 3,700 animals spend time in foster homes. And so they really help expand our life-saving capacity. And if you're interested in fostering, it's really easy to sign up. Sometimes dogs or cats or small animals only need foster for a couple days. Other times, it's for a couple weeks or a few months. But foster parents save lives, and they make such a difference. In a situation like this with the Invigo Beagles, we wouldn't have been able to say yes without knowing that our foster parents had our back and would be willing to take these dogs into their homes.
Before I let you go, I just want to ask about economic strains of households and whether there is any connection between financial issues, high inflation, and all the constraints we're seeing in our economy to having a pet and being able to afford to care for that pet properly.
Absolutely. And what we're seeing right now is that there is increased demand for some of our services, like at our low-cost spay-neuter clinic. We offer public vaccine clinics that are very low cost. We also even have a pet food bank that's open 7 days a week to assist families through tough financial times. And we are regularly seeing those shelves go bare this time of year. We also know that the number one reason why people surrender pets to the Wisconsin Humane Society comes down to financial reasons. They can't afford a medical care or food. We try to assist them the best that we can, but that is the number one reason why people end up needing to surrender an animal.
Angela, thank you for joining us.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having me this morning.
Angela Speed is Vice President of Communications at Wisconsin Humane Society. And up ahead, we stick to the pets. It's a behavior and training specialist from the Wisconsin Humane Society as well, and a veterinarian fielding your pet behavior questions. Join in on all aspects of adding puppies, adding kittens to your home, to the management of geriatric pets and a quality lifespan. 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show here on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We're talking about pet adoption in Wisconsin. Helpful tips now on pet behavior, especially when blending a new pet into the home. Oh, we were so close recently to adopting a second adult cat. Filled out the application, but decided against it ultimately. Our 13-year-old Maddie was our first baby and has lived a solo life in peace, except for all the kids, of course. Join in with your pet behavior questions, your unique situations, 800-642-1234. Samantha Steinbring is a behavior and training specialist at the Wisconsin Humane Society. Sam, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm glad to be here.
And we also have Dr. Don Mogilevsky, who is a small animal holistic veterinarian, certified in acupuncture and veterinary spinal manipulative therapy, president of the Dane County Veterinary Medical Association. Dr. Mogilevsky, welcome to you.
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be here with you this morning.
Well, let's start with you. And as you see rising inflation, that could mean people spending less time working with their pets as they spend more time working to make ends meet. Are there issues with that when the financial situation of a household is strained?
I believe that is always an issue. And in my community of clients and pet owners, I'm very fortunate to have worked with people who really feel their pets are family members, and often will make ends meet somewhere else rather than cutting back on their pets' care or needs. But when faced with an unexpected expense due to an accident or an illness, that is always a difficult place people come to. Mm. Yeah. And so it definitely affects people's lives and the lives of their pets.
Sam, can you pick up on that? What should someone consider before adopting a rescued animal?
Yeah, well, I think that one of the things that is so wonderful, if we're looking specifically at the training side of things, is that because of all of the technology that we have available to us, there are so many resources that folks can seek out. There are some very, very talented trainers who offer free or, you know, reasonably priced training support that you can access online. You can do virtual classes. There are some organizations, including the Wisconsin Humane Society, who on a very limited capacity is able to support folks who need lower cost training support. So I think that there, if we're looking specifically at supporting our animals behaviorally, I think there's a whole wealth of information out there that we can access. You know, the big thing is just making sure that our communities know what's available to them.
Mm, yes. So really searching out those resources. Dr. Mogilevsky, you know, when the pandemic shut down everything, the data says many American households turned to adopting a pet. And now those pets are more than 2 years old if they were puppies and kittens at the time. What are some uniquenesses you see of pandemic pets?
Right. One of the things that I think has come of this is that there hasn't been the socialization of pets that we might have had under certain circumstances. Because people were home, they spent a lot of time with their new pets or their existing family pets. And those pets got a lot of socialization within the family, but less socialization in terms of going out into the world. Hmm. I myself was with my husband at a state park, and a family with two young children and a puppy, you know, were there. And I approached and asked if I could meet the puppy. And this mother immediately said, "Oh, this is a COVID puppy. She doesn't know how to interact with people." And I said, "Well, you know, I'll sit down and spend some time if you think that would be helpful. Have you got some treats?" And it's just, you know, people put this bubble around themselves, including their pets, and they didn't get that socialization. One of the great things with pets, new puppies, new pets, cats less limited, is to introduce them to as many people and as many social interactions as possible in a way that they feel safe. And that just wasn't possible for a lot of people. The other thing that happened is a lot of people stayed home for work, and then when they had to go back to work, that was a shock to their pets. And in some situations, those pets developed some separation anxiety because of that. And I'm sure Sam would have some comments on that.
Sam, yes. First of all, though, going back to the first point, Sam, where are some of the greatest places for safely socializing your new pet?
Yeah, so a lot of times, especially when I'm talking to puppy owners, and we're talking in particular about kind of considerations to make with COVID, one of the best things for puppy owners to keep in mind is that you can do a lot of really, really good socialization from a distance. So if I'm talking to clients where they have concerns about being in close contact with folks, I always tell them, go to your local park, let them see people and dogs and cars and all of that novelty from a distance, and that's a great starting point. We also talk a lot about literally just parking your car in a busy parking lot. You can sit with your puppy in the front seat and just watch the world go by. So there's a whole lot that we can do to begin to acclimate our dogs to the idea that there are a lot of interesting, strange, different things out in the world. And I think very much like, Dr. Dawn mentioned, the big thing is that we have to be so careful with our young puppies not to keep them inside of a super insulated bubble, because dogs very naturally are very aware of and sometimes worried about, changes in their environments. So we do want to make sure as much as we possibly can that they're just comfortable with the idea that there's going to be, novelty and strangeness as a part of their lives. Beyond that, we actually have a lot of great dog-friendly businesses in the area. So, many hardware stores are dog-friendly. I always tell folks, make sure you call in advance and confirm that pet dogs are welcome in their spaces. Joann Fabrics is friendly. TJ Maxx is friendly. So there are so many lovely spaces where, really, if you carry your young puppy inside, you do one lap around the store and just kind of let them see the world. It goes a very, very long way towards helping them to be as comfortable, with things outside of their home space as possible.
If you're just joining us, we're talking about pet behavior, about pet training and rescues with Sam Steinbring, who's a behavior and training specialist at the Wisconsin Humane Society. Dr. Don Mogilevsky is here, small animal holistic veterinarian, president of the Dane County Veterinary Medical Association. Let's take a call now. Lindsay is joining us from Westby. Lindsay, hi. What would you like to bring up?
Hi, I volunteer at our local shelter, Driftless Humane Society in Viroqua, and I'm also on the school board. I think along with this is a challenge for us local shelters to fundraise constantly to support efforts. I mean, we are dependent on the little kids who run the lemonade stands, as well as your student councils and grade level fundraisers at schools, and grateful for that. What we also do is because Midwest is so good with spaying and neutering, we help bring in animals from Texas, Alabama, Kansas, and Tennessee, where the overpopulation is horrific. And we're trying to work to see if we can get some dogs up from Kentucky due to all that flooding.
Lindsay, thank you for your efforts and for talking about just the burden on shelters to give back and do more. Sam, what is your perspective from the Wisconsin Humane Society?
So Angela, who you had on first, really is our expert in terms of, information, in terms of, what numbers look like and things like that. But I do know that, much like the Driftless Humane Society, the Wisconsin Humane Society, really, 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 benefits directly from all of the generous donors that we have. Because as a nonprofit, having the generosity of our community is really, really super integral in terms of our ability to do all of the work that we do. So, yeah, it's tough, really, really depending on your local communities, is something that is something that is really, at least in our experience, very cool to be a part of. Because what I've heard time and time again is that at least in our area, every time we tell the community that we need additional support, they always step up, which we're incredibly grateful for.
The Wisconsin Humane Society's Sam Steinbring, their behavior and training specialist. Dr. Don Mogilevsky is with us, small animal holistic veterinarian. Join in on barking, chewing, scratching, separation anxiety, aggressive behavior with other dogs or cats, 800-642-1234. We'll pick this up after a news update. Stay with us on the Ideas Network. It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. So pets communicate a number of different things to us. They lick, they wag their tail. Personally, the eye blink cat kisses. They melt my heart. So maybe your pet has started to do something now that you just don't understand. Join in on reward-based training techniques. Join in on pet health, bonding with your new pet, 800-642-1234. We have Sam Steinbring, a behavior and training specialist at the Wisconsin Humane Society. And Dr. Don Mogilevsky is here, small animal holistic veterinarian. Let's go to Kay in Berlin. Kay, what's your situation?
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I have a almost 9-year-old Mastiff mix who has been very well trained. He is not overweight, very healthy. We make sure he gets all his shots and everything all the time. His problem is, and I don't know a delicate way of putting this, he does the butt scooch on the carpet.
Oh, dear.
And we've had him examined. We've had the anaplans taken care of. I mean, it's so bad that when he goes to the vet, he automatically puts his butt down because he knows they're going for the butt. So is there any suggestions? I look, I wipe his butt when he comes in from outside, and I'm at my wit's end.
Kay, thank you for that. We're going to go to both of our guests for insights. But the veterinarian first, Dr. Mogilevsky, what are you thinking here?
Yeah, certainly what you mentioned in terms of the butt scooting and relationship to anal sac is definitely the most common cause of that. And certainly it sounds like you've had it checked enough times if your dog expects that. I would think about looking at certainly intestinal parasites, if that hasn't been done, can cause irritation in that area, having a stool sample checked for that. I would think about any sort of other causes of itching, whether that could be a food. Seasonal allergies don't usually show up that late in life. Something else in the yard that's causing an irritation, a contact irritation, bug bites, why your dog would be choosing, or I shouldn't say choosing, experiencing discomfort in that specific location, unless it's related to the digestive tract or the anal sacs, is a bit of a stretch. And so talking to your veterinarian about could there be some low-grade infection? Could there be some low-grade inflammation in the anal sacs? And is there anything we can do medically to address that, as well as checking a stool sample for intestinal parasites? That's probably what I would key in on.
Mm-hmm. Sam, what is coming up for you as you think about training techniques?
Yeah, so I will say anytime I have a client reach out to me with a sudden behavior change, especially in a dog of that age, the very first thing I tell them is to go to their vet, because typically, unless we've had some type of traumatic event, you know, or there's been some major change in their life, if we're seeing a significant behavior change, especially this type of behavior, the likelihood is very, very high that there's some type of underlying medical concern. Beyond that, you know, beyond saying, you know, I'd strongly recommend you continue to work with your veterinarian, one of the things that we always look at if we're trying to eliminate a behavior is just giving them a replacement behavior. So giving them something else to do. Now, when we look at things like butt scooching, if we've got a predictable trigger for when it might happen, you know, such as we go into a certain space or we come in from a potty break, then I would look at what else can I give them? Can I offer them a Kong to work on? Can I do a little scatter of treats on the ground for them to work on so that we give them something to do in that moment where they would typically drop their butts and do the little butt scooch. So that would be one of the things that I would look at if we're looking at modifying things in terms of behavior. But then, like I said, certainly also just recognizing that if there is an underlying medical concern, that we probably need to make sure we're addressing that, you know, because if there is some type of discomfort, you know, it's not going to be a functional ask for our pets to expect that behavior to go away entirely, unless we can figure out what it is that's going on that's causing it in the first place.
Those underlying issues. Kay, thank you for that question. And Dr. Mogilevsky, this might not be related to Kay's 9-year-old Mastiff, but what are how might you use acupuncture to help with behavior problems?
Interesting question. I treated over the years a variety of behavior problems, both in cats and in dogs. And I practiced acupuncture from traditional Chinese veterinary medicine perspective. And it's looking at what's so important in any behavioral concern is the whole system of the individual, both their physical, their medical health, their environment, their emotions, their social interactions, looking for places where there's balance and, more importantly, imbalances. And acupuncture works with providing balance to the body. Addressing those concerns energetically with acupuncture from a traditional Chinese medicine point of view, physiologically, acupuncture works a great deal through balancing the nervous system and the immune system. Mm. So that plays a huge role in our physical and emotional health. And then I also worked a lot with herbal therapy and natural supplements. And when you find the right match, you know, come up with the right, you really in all of these situations, we are hopefully searching for the root of the problem. It's not always obvious. Sometimes that becomes displayed over time. Hmm. As we solve a surface problem, something deeper shows up and we get deeper and deeper. When you find the right match, the herbal therapy and acupuncture can be wonderful, wonderful answers to some of the behavioral problems that we see.
How do the animals
and
react?
I will add that.
I was just going to ask you, how do the animals react to the needles in acupuncture?
Yeah, interesting. They are greatly accepting of it. Huh. And a lot of that has to do with their people. In most cases, if the person is accepting and eager for something, believes that this is going to be helpful or wishes it for it to be helpful, the pets relax into that. And after one or two treatments, acupuncture actually feels wonderful. It releases a lot of the chemicals in our body that lead to feeling good and feeling relaxed. And a lot of times, even dealing with pets that have anxiety, just coming into the room, they climb up onto the bed. You know, we have it's not a clinical setting. It's a very comfortable, more like a family room setting. Hmm. They climb up onto the bed with a blanket and snuggle in, and they're okay. I'm ready.
They're ready.
So it's very gratifying and very rewarding for the practitioner, the family member, and the pet.
Talking about training and managing pet behavior with two experts as our guides, Dr. Don Mogilevsky, small animal holistic veterinarian, president of the Dane County Veterinary Medical Association. Sam Steinbring is here, behavior and training specialist at the Wisconsin Humane Society. Let's go to Dean now, who has a 5-year-old German Shepherd. Dean, what's going on?
Well, good morning. I have a 5-year-old German Shepherd who weighs about 75 pounds. Did a lot of training with him, did puppy class, did the first two kind of basic obedience classes, and he actually got his canine good citizen. And that was all kind of within his first year and a couple months of life. But within the last 3 years or so, he started this kind of habit of getting extremely excited when anybody walks through the door, whether it be a friend coming over or myself returning from work, and he jumps up on you to greet you. And I've tried to, basically get him to stop this without much luck. And it's been going on for a while. So I'm just looking for tips and tricks to maybe get him to stop doing that.
Dean, thank you. Sam?
Yeah, so I always tell people, first off, Dean, like, sociability is a gift. It's such a lovely thing when we have social animals, but especially when we have very large dogs, then that's another kind of piece that we have to definitely work through. So one of the things that we have to keep in mind is that when we have high energy dogs, expressing that energy just feels good for them. So very often when we look at supporting our dogs with not jumping on people, we'll absolutely tell our guests, please turn your back if they jump on you, please ignore them. And all of that you should continue to do. All of those are very productive things because we want to make sure we're not unintentionally reinforcing all of that jumping with social attention. But for some of our dogs, they just enjoy the jumping so much that even if everyone is ignoring them, the behavior will continue. And so if we're finding that that's the case, that's where a little bit of a management plan can really, really be helpful. So what I would recommend is if this is a pattern that he's been practicing for quite some time, when people come in, I'll recommend that you either have him on a leash or behind a baby gate. And the reason for this is that we want to make sure that until he has a chance to calm down, he's not also able to practice that jumping. The other thing that can be incredibly helpful is just giving him something else to do. So we very often kind of jokingly talk about things like bully sticks and Kongs and other types of edible chews as puppy pacifiers, because it does really functionally work in that way. So usually when I see a pup like your kiddo that you're describing, what I would say is have him behind a baby gate, give him something to chew on, and they might just be behind that gate for the first 5, 10, 15 minutes that folks are over. And then when you do see them finally relax, okay, now we can go ahead and we can give them the opportunity to share space with them. The other piece of the puzzle is just managing the human component, because when we have lovely, beautiful social dogs, very often you'll find that, folks get very excited to see them. They very often talk in a high-pitched voice. They'll say things like, oh, it's fine, as they're petting them when they jump on them. So you'll also want to have a pretty clear strategy in place for just communicating with your family members that until your pup has had a chance to calm down, you'll really need them to keep things super quiet, super low-key, don't go greet them, right? And then once, the pupper has finally calmed down, they can have some nice quiet greetings, but we're really going to depend on the human half of the team too, to support us with helping the pups to stay calm, and then even while he's out, you might say, if this has been kind of a chronic issue, maybe he's dragging a leash so that if he gets overly excited, he starts jumping, we very calmly and gently pick up that leash, walk him back behind that baby gate, give him a chance to calm down again, and then we can try again in a little bit.
Dean, have you tried the baby gate technique or the quiet greetings or the ignoring, any of these things coming up?
Definitely some of the ignoring, but no, I have not tried the baby gate technique.
Well, thank you so much for your call. Appreciate it. Sam Steinbring, a behavior and training specialist at the Wisconsin Humane Society. Dr. Don Mogilevsky, small animal, his holistic veterinarian. Join in with pet behavior questions. Still time, 800-642-1234. You're listening to The Morning Show here on the Ideas Network. It's The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent, talking about pet behavior questions, your experiences taking in a shelter animal. We have veterinarian Don Mogilevsky here, along with Wisconsin Humane Society's behavior and training specialist, Sam Steinbring. Let's take another call. Mary is with us from Chippewa Falls. Mary, what's going on?
Oh, yes. We have a rescue dog that has obviously had some separation anxiety issues, and when we leave to go somewhere, we try to let him know we're going, and if we sneak out of the house, he's very upset. He's going to be at a border for a while, and I'm just wondering what we can possibly do to help him not have so many problems. Should I take a shirt along, his pillow along, or would that be worse to have a home thing with him?
Mary, thank you so much for bringing up severe anxiety. Dr. Mogilevsky, you first.
Right. And I will probably defer a lot of this to Sam, but having things from home will be very helpful in terms of having, as you thought, things that are his sense from home, maybe a favorite toy, a dog bed, a blanket, your clothing, things like that would be helpful, not a hindrance. It's like when I go to a hotel, I might take a blanket and a pillow with me. I sleep better. The other thing I would suggest would be talk to the people at this kennel and pay some visits there. Find out who will be directly responsible for his care on a daily basis and take the opportunity to make several visits and let him interact with that person, get to know them, have them give him some treats. If it's possible, leave him for a short period of time, maybe with that person. Maybe you pay an extra fee. Maybe this person is willing to do it on their own time. Spend some time at the kennel, going for a walk with this person, whatever it is, if they do walks, if they do group play, can he spend a half an hour in group play? You come back, your dog is like, oh, wow, I was here for half an hour and mom and dad come get back to get me. I would do everything I could to prepare him for that gradually instead of an abrupt, I'm in a new place and my family is gone.
Outside of boarding, though, how do you feel about medications for separation anxiety?
I think medications can be very helpful. Medications should always be a supplement to training techniques. Getting a dog used to be people being alone. In very severe cases where a dog is harming themselves, destroying things in the house, if things are getting worse and worse instead of better and better with the training techniques, either medications or nutritional supplements can be very helpful. You don't want to knock a dog out, but maybe just take the edge off.
Sam, your thoughts?
Yeah, so Dr. Don, you had awesome recommendations. You know, definitely, Mary, like she said, working on getting your pup acclimated to the space just a little bit at a time is really helpful. One of the things that you might kind of explore is that when we look at dogs who really struggle when their family leaves, sometimes it's separation anxiety, you know, where they say, I just don't want to be separate from my humans or any humans. Sometimes it's confinement anxiety. So sometimes they say, I really don't want to be in this kennel, but if we tried leaving them loose, they would be more successful. So we can both play around with that at home just a little bit. But you might also, you know, consider like, what is the setup look at the boarding facility? You might find that if your pup is largely going to be in the presence of other human beings, that if you can do that gradual acclimation that Dr. Don talked about, that'll do just fine. You might also find that, you know, if he has to be confined in a kennel run or a crate or whatever that looks like, that might be really, really challenging for him. So both at home, but also, you know, I would also have a conversation with the kennel workers about what does this setup look like? What type of confinement do they use? And, you know, if you take him there and they find while you're out of town that he's really having a hard time, do they have alternative options for how they might, you know, kind of physically keep him safe? That I think will be where Dr. Don's recommendation of, you know, trying to give him kind of little mini visits before you actually leave town is a really, really good idea, because ideally, if he's going to find that some aspect of that is particularly challenging, we're going to want to go ahead and find that out as quickly as possible. Beyond that, when we're looking at things from a training perspective, one of the first things we always look at is how can we just build positive associations with having these types of experiences. So, you know, maybe every time we leave him with a puzzle toy, we leave him with a filled Kong, we leave him with a brand new toy, right? Mm-hmm. And maybe we can send similar things along to the boarding facility, as long as they're going to be things that are safe for him, so that we can make sure that we're continuing to just pair all of these experiences with lovely things. When we're looking at supporting him at home, it is also really, really helpful to actually set up a camera so that you can just do a little bit more information gathering so we can see exactly what's going on when you're outside of the home. You know, is he very, very upset for the first 2 minutes? And then does he settle and nap and play with his toys? Or is he really distressed the entire time that you're gone?
Oh, the technology helping us out. Yes.
Yep, absolutely. Yep. And based on what information we gather, you know, then that goes a really long way towards helping us understand exactly what we need to do to support them. You know, sometimes we can really support our pups with some separation issues with, you know, really, like I said, just pairing things or pairing that leaving with, you know, getting lovely things. And sometimes we really need to embark on a much more significant training plan, but that can be a really, really good starting point so that we can, you know, kind of get on that road towards success.
Mary, thank you. Cindy now in Minocqua with almost 7-year-old Siamese cat.
Correct. Yeah. So this guy has a ton of personality. He does have a brother, littermates. And so for about a year and a half, he has started to bite me. And he will be sitting on my lap, just all curled up, being really sweet. He'll come and sit like at the table in front of me if I'm working on my computer. At night when I'm in bed doing puzzles, he'll come onto the bed, sit above my head, or just sit, you know, on the bed.
And Cindy, because we're short on time here, he's doing all these sweet things, but then he'll turn and he'll bite. Dr. Mogilevsky, any suggestions there in our final moments?
Yeah, you know, I'll take from the veterinary medical standpoint, something has changed. I would start out with a very close look at his health and also the structure of his spine and his joints. Some cats develop arthritis at an early age, and it could be that if you slightly shift your position or he shifts his position and he gets a little, oh, that hurt, is he reacting with a bite? That's just a very brief comment.
All right. Well, Cindy, thank you. And Dr. Mogilevsky and Sam Steinbring, thank you both for joining us.
Yeah, absolutely.
You're very welcome. My pleasure.
Dr. Don Mogilevsky, small animal holistic veterinarian, president of the Dane County Veterinary Medical Association. Sam Steinbring as well, behavior and training specialist at the Wisconsin Humane Society. Earlier, we talked with Wisconsin Humane Society's Angela Speed. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show here in the Ideas Network.